Hello and welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. Mary Steves here alongside our fearless leader and popcorn enthusiast, which I actually just learned that the popcorn you love most, Tim, is actually at Target, correct?
Well, I must say it's awfully good.
Yeah. Good to know. For all of our listeners out there who are also popcorn enthusiasts, now you know. Tim, I'm so looking forward to the conversation that we get to have today, and that's with Dr. Jean Twenge. Dr. Twenge is a professor of psychology at San Diego State University and the author of more than 110 scientific publications, in addition to books entitled Narcissism Epidemic and Generation Me. Not only is she a professor and author, but in her spare time, she is a speaker and consultant. And in today's episode, we have two segments, a conversation with Dr. Twenge, and also some practical applications with Tim. So Tim, why don't you kick us off for this first half of our conversation?
Great. Thanks, Mary. Jean, thank you for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
I always enjoy hearing from you. And really, our topic today is surrounds the mental health of this emerging population of students. So I want to peek inside the mind of the I generation. Now, first and foremost, Jean, if you will, you are doing some research right now. In fact, the cement is still wet on your findings. But talk about the term you'd like to use and who these students are.
Yeah, so I think that there is a generational break between the millennials and the generation after them, who I'd like to call iGen. With the birth year of about 1995. So there's a number of reasons for that. 1995 happens to be the year the internet was commercialized. So iGen has never known a world without the internet. They also were just getting into their adolescent years when smartphones became available. And sure enough, it looks like there's some trends in mental health among young people that start to change right around 2011 or 2012 when smartphones gain market saturation. So more than 50% of people had smartphones. And in many other of this still wet cement data that I'm looking at, there seems to be a turning point around 2011 or 2012 in the high school data that I analyzed. So that means that iGen is currently about 21 and under. And so that's going to be not just our grade school and high school students, but a lot of our university and college students as well.
Mm, wow. Well, I love how you set that up, because we do see some angst and some different mental health issues that emerge with this student that's always been online, that's always been on a screen or touching a screen or whatever. So let me start with the first question, Jean. What have you and your team seen when it comes to the mental health of the I generation? Just give me a blanket, maybe a couple of statements that give us a general sense of the mental health of these students.
Yeah, so there is growing evidence that mental health issues are increasing among teens. So I'll give you two examples, both from big federal government sources. So first, one of the most serious is that the suicide rate among young people, which had been dropping since the early 90s and stabilized with the millennials, has started to tick up again. So suicide rate for those about age 15 to 24, according to the Centers for Disease Control data, has started to increase. And that might be because more are depressed. So there's a big survey done by the Department of Health and Human Services. It's the screening survey for depression. And they have all the criteria for a major depressive disorder. And they look at the percentage of teens, age 12 to 17 in this case, who fit those criteria for having experienced depression in the last year. So, you know, so clinically relevant depression, not just sad feelings here or there, but feeling so sad or hopeless for 2 weeks that they stopped doing some of the regular activities. So that's one of the criteria. And there's been a really big increase in that. So there was an article in Pediatrics that discussed that data. Time Magazine had a cover story on teen anxiety and depression that featured this data. And it's a really striking increase. So about 50% more teens are suffering from anxiety and depression in the latest data, 2015, compared to 2010. So it goes from about 8% in 2010 to about 12% in 2015. So that's a pretty significant increase in a very short period of time. So I think that as that gets publicized more and discussed more, I think there's going to be a growing concern among parents and educators about the mental health of this generation.
So would you say, and I know you can't just make a broad brushstroke sweeping statement because the data is still fresh and you're still analyzing it, but would you say some of the causes are social media on phones and the smartphone itself, the constant pinging? What would be some things that you would just say, just as a caring human being who cares about kids?
Yeah. So looking at the timing of that increase let's say take the increase in depression, it happened right around 2011 or 2012, exactly when smartphones really gained market penetration, exactly when young people started to spend even more time on social media and online. I mean, those increases have been going on for a while, but once it ended up on the phone and thus constantly present, the effects might have been greater. And there's a lot of theories that have been introduced to explain, you know, why there might be more mental health challenges and anxiety. So one I see online a lot is, oh, academic pressure, they have more homework. Mm-hmm. Well, I know from some published data, exactly the opposite is true. Believe it or not, today's students actually do less homework. In terms of the hours of homework they're doing, it's less, particularly for 8th graders and 10th graders. So for high school seniors, it's what we call a curvilinear thing, and it dropped and then it did start to come back up, but it's still not where it was, say, in the 70s. And for 8th graders, it's pretty much straight down, and that's one of the groups that is experiencing it more, depression. So that really doesn't seem to be a plausible explanation. So that means we have to turn to other possibilities. And it's very difficult in data like this to prove that one thing causes another. To really prove that in science, we need a controlled experiment. You can't do a controlled experiment with generations. You can't randomly assign somebody to be born in 1995 versus 1980. You can't do that. So given that, I think you have to look at two criteria. First, does it correlate with depression or mental health issues among a population of individuals? And we know from other research on social media that yes, in most studies it does. Those who spend a lot of time on social media, there's more mental health issues. And then second, do the two things increase at the same time and in the correct direction? And the answer to that is yes as well. So that's what makes me think social media it's at least a suspect. I don't think we have a conviction yet. That will take some more time, but it's awfully suspicious.
Yeah. Well, as we work directly with students like you do, you just see it even anecdotally, just and sometimes it's not just the constant pinging of the phone, with messaging coming in, but it's what's there. I think you probably have read, like I have, just sometimes depression levels go up just reading all the marvelous vacations that took place on Facebook, and man, my life sucks, because everybody else has got a great life, and that sort of thing. So again, that's anecdotal, but I can see what you're saying with, I see faces of students in my head who struggle with this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's always, you got to go to the next level. So then, okay, if it is social media and spending time online, then what is it about that that is creating or leading to these mental health issues? So that's one possibility, that comparison to other people's lives, of some of the cyberbullying that goes on, the constant connectedness that you're never off. The other question you have to ask is, well, we know that teens and young adults are spending an extraordinary amount of time on their smartphones, which means they have less time for other things.
Yeah.
So if those other things are things like seeing friends in person or engaging in sports or exercise or other, things that you do without a screen, that are good for mental health, that could be another possible cause as well, a more indirect one, that social media is pushing. It's just meaning that there's less time for things that are healthy.
One question that came to my mind was, you have now written and been directly in front of students for many, many years. What are some of the overarching shifts that you have seen maybe over the last 5 years, in addition to what you're saying? I know some of what you're saying is a shift, but are there significant shifts that listeners would benefit from just knowing about that you're seeing in high school and college students?
So, you know, one thing that's very interesting is the emphasis on safety among iGen. And that was true for millennials as well, but iGen has really taken it to this next level. And you can see this from their childhood onward, that this is a generation, the first really, you know, millennials were the first to ride in car seats.
Yeah.
And to not walk to school by themselves. And there's this huge emphasis on safety, which for the most part is a fantastic thing.
If you look
at some of the trends in, say, I mean, just as one example, you know, teens dying in car accidents, that rate is way, way, way down from what it used to be. Mm-hmm. So we are, as parents, I have three kids myself, so I say we are keeping our children safer. Yeah. And, you know, for the most part, that is a definitely a positive development. What many people have commented on, though, is the possibility that, as with many cultural trends, this one has perhaps been taken too far. If we have protected our children so much from so many different things, that they're basically afraid of the world. Mm-hmm. And anecdotally, that's what a lot of people are observing. Obviously, some of these things on college campuses around, say, trigger warnings and safe spaces are deeper issues and bigger political debates as well. However, I think everybody can agree that they do symbolize a overarching interest in safety, not just physical safety, but emotional safety. Yeah. And I've started to notice that a lot of the statements put out by principals, university presidents, and so on, when they talk about incidents on campus or anything, the word safety often comes up, even if, as far as I can tell, there's not necessarily any physical threat at all. The word safety often comes up. And I think that's speaking the language of this generation.
I agree. We have interfaced this year a lot with parents as well as faculty members. And yeah, the parents, they're well-intentioned. And this safety thing, as you just said, is a very good thing, actually, in essence, if we have fewer teens dying in accidents. But yeah, there's always that unintended consequence of this kid now that is afraid to do normal risk-taking ventures at 25, perhaps, because he never or she never did that when they were younger, when the stakes were lower, and mom was right there. So
Go ahead. Oh no! I was just going to say it. It is interesting how so many cultural changes do get, you know, kind of taken to their illogical conclusion you know, we have, say, teens now who it's second nature to them to buckle up, and wear their seatbelt, and that's very good. But then if we end up with teens who are afraid to learn how to drive, then, you know, then it's like, well, maybe that's not so good if mom and dad have to drive around the 18-year-old everywhere he or she wants to go. And that's just one example. I mean, I think you see this, too, with this idea of emotional safety. So for the book I'm working on a book called iGen about this generation. I'm doing some interviews in addition to looking at lots of hard data. And it is striking to me how many young people I talk to, when they talked about relationships, they talked about wanting to be emotionally safe. Like, many of them were afraid to enter relationships because they were afraid to get hurt. So that's another place where sometimes this abundance of caution may not always be entirely a good thing.
Jean, you've been studying narcissism with the emerging generations and have written books about it. And it's data. It's not you whining. It's saying, wait, let's look at the numbers here. Where do you see the iGeneration going when it comes to levels of narcissism? Do you see anything trending?
So we just started working on this. So this is another example of where the data are not yet set. So I can't give you the specific numbers, but it looks like right around the recession, that rise in narcissism that we documented from the boomers to the Gen Xers to millennials, which, and we documented that across three or four different populations, and several other authors shown the same thing, rise in narcissism between the 80s and about 2008, that's begun to falter with iGen. And we're still trying to figure out exactly how much. But it looks like iGen is not going to continue the upward trajectory of narcissism in the way that millennials did.
That's good news. And I can see how there might be a connection there.
But young people who are narcissistic are also usually less likely to be depressed. The depression usually comes later, is what research finds. When, you know, you're too narcissistic that things go badly at work and at home and it kind of blows up your life. But as a young person, it's an okay life strategy, at least in the short term, for the self. And so it actually is usually connected to more positive mental health indicators. So as iGen turns toward depression, for that reason, it makes some sense that those more positive self-views might turn down. Yeah. Now, we're not seeing that across the board. So college students, for example, iGen college students are just as likely to say that they're above average in self-confidence and drive to achieve and leadership ability than, say, millennials 5 or 10 years ago. So in some cases, that self-confidence is hanging around, but it looks to be faltering in other areas.
Interesting. Well, and I think it's going to be very interesting to watch the next 4 to 5 years as the later kids who went through an economic recession for perhaps as a child and saw mom lose her job or whatever, reality hit the iGen sooner than it hit the millennial generation in many cases.
That's right. So, no, absolutely.
Yeah,
I mean, as a, you know, you think about it from that generational perspective, on average, that is what happened, iGen got this reality check. And, you know, it's the recession is another thing we have to consider. I'm glad you brought that up with, say, some of the mental health issues. Maybe it was the recession that caused that. Well, it's possible. I mean, it certainly looks like that might be one of the causes for the downturn in narcissism. But for the mental health issues, depression rates were pretty stable between 2005 and 2011. And so if it was the recession, we would think that that downturn would happen. I mean, sorry, the uptick in depression would happen more like 2008. And it did not. It wasn't until 2011, 2012 when that really showed up.
Interesting.
So that to me points more in the direction of smartphones rather than the recession. Because the recession officially ended in June 2009. Now, high unemployment persisted well through 2010 and even a little bit later. But still, you know, 2012 was when things were starting to look better. And that's when depression has continued to go up. And it continued up in 2013 and 2014 and 2015 when things were definitely on the upswing in the economy.
Interesting. So interesting. Well, the final question I want to ask you, I want you to really take your time and let's banter back and forth, or volley back and forth, maybe is a better term. I would love to now talk real quick just about, from your angle, what are some practical action steps that educators or parents could take to help students mature in a healthy way, where perhaps they overcome the angst but they may be experiencing or the depression and really turn out to be healthy, well-adjusted adults?
Well, I think my first suggestion, the kids aren't going to be a fan of, but the more data I analyze, the more convinced I am we have to get those smartphones out of their hands and our own. I mean, plenty of middle-aged adults are walking
around that way, too.
But the more data I see, the more I'm convinced that this is just not a good thing. And that, sure, they're convenient. And, you know, to text back and forth about logistics and during the day when we can't answer the phone and to find information and so on is a wonderful thing. I don't think we need to give up our phones entirely. But that, you know, prototypical example of the teen or the adult, for that matter, who has that phone in her hand, and it's often girls, all the time, and thus is not seeing her friends in person, is not getting out and exercising, is not sleeping enough, you know, any of these other things. This is a very negative thing for mental and physical health. And for a while, it wasn't entirely clear. You'd think maybe this is good. You know, they're communicating with their friends and the medium is just different than it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, they're even more connected with their friends. Shouldn't that be good? But I think the more data that's coming out on mental health and its connections to social media, the more negative it gets. I mean, I have three girls, my daughters, and my middle one for a long time kept asking me, "Mommy, when can I have a phone?" And she started asking me that when she was six. And at first I said, "Well, maybe when you go to middle school and you're riding the bus."
Yeah.
And then after I'd started analyzing some of this new data, I started saying, "I don't know, honey, maybe not until high school."
Yeah.
I started answering her question differently the more data that I saw. And we'll see. But, you know, kind of as a practical suggestion, a friend of mine, her son went to middle school this year in our neighborhood taking the bus. So for safety reasons, they wanted to get him a phone. They got him a flip phone. So he can call them. He can text by, you remember how you used to have to text, pressing all the little numbers?
That's right.
So you can say, you know, like, "Mom, I'm almost here," or "almost here," or even "ALS here," you know, and get your message across. But you don't have Snapchat in your hand all the time.
Yeah, right. Makes sense. Well, and you know, you referred earlier, Jean, about the getting exercise outside. You made that passing comment. I wonder, you got a combination of I'm on my phone doing social media, and I may not be active. I may be sitting or standing or whatever, but I'm sedentary. That's not a good combination. And I know I probably sound like a grandfather right now, but just getting exercise in addition to a technology fast could probably be a good thing, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And for that, I think I'm actually more concerned about younger kids than older ones because high school kids, there's a lot of organized sports.
Yeah, sure.
So they're often, you know, they kind of have them do PE and all of that. And they do that in elementary school too. But elementary school kids, even more, they need more of that running around. And it's not quite as structured for them. So if they're spending a lot more time sedentary, that could be even worse for them. And because it looks like high school students, it's about the same. I've looked at sports and exercise, and it's down a little bit, but it's not that much. So fortunately, I think for high school students, we're relatively okay on that score.
Interesting. Well, I have so appreciated your insights, and I can hardly wait to read this data in your book that'll be coming out in 2017.
August. The publication date. So okay. August 2017 for iGen.
And ready for a new school year in August, too. That's kind of fun.
That's the idea.
That's awesome.
That's the idea, yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, Jean, thank you again. We are looking forward to seeing you at our National Leadership Forum in June of 2017. Mary, we'll talk about that in just a minute. I'm anxious to get to have you and just not only allow you to impart to our audience of educators, but also then to allow them to ask you questions. And these are caring adults that just want to get it right as they teach kids. So we're going to have a good time.
Absolutely. Sounds good.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Jean, again. If not before, we'll look forward to seeing you in June.
Thanks, Jean.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dr. Twenge and Tim, thank you so much for this conversation. If you would like to learn more, we would like to personally invite you to the 2017 National Leadership Forum here in Atlanta, Georgia, on June 22nd to the 23rd. Tim, I'd love to take this time to dive into our second segment, second half of the podcast, to talk about practical applications with the conversation we just had.
Absolutely. Well, a lot went through my mind, and I am so looking forward to having Jean with us in June. I'm hoping, listeners, that you can join us. It's going to be 2 days loaded with interaction where you can ask Jean questions as well as John Maxwell and several others. It's just going to be a great time. The items that went through my mind were from the classroom standpoint. Jean talked about smartphones quite a bit, if you remember.
I do.
And she talked about how maybe parents need to get that phone out of their hand. It reminded me how often, Mary, that I hear educators say, "Do I utilize the phone in my classroom or remove the phone from my classroom?" And I think there's mixed reviews on that.
Absolutely.
In fact, I know teachers, both higher education and K-12, that would say they've chosen different routes. Some would say, "I cannot teach a class when those kids have that stupid phone in their hand." But then I also know teachers that would say, no, we utilize for educational purposes that smartphone, and they're looking things up and researching and so forth. Now, are some kids on Snapchat or Instagram?
They'll abuse it.
Probably so. But I think here's what I would say to that. In fact, I would encourage you just to ponder this. The answer probably is in the middle. I think it's very wise to utilize technology whenever we can for two reasons. Number one, it's their natural habitat. They feel like you get them when you let them do that. But number two, it's their future. They're probably going to get a job where they use their mind and they're using technology, mm-hmm. perhaps even social media for marketing. Mm-hmm. So instead of saying, no, you're not going to have it until you graduate from school would be silly, just in the name of sanity or in the name of silence. Now, I realize that's hard in the classroom because you're wanting to corral these students. But I would say, what if we so engage them with a project or a problem that could utilize social media or somehow research on their device, their portable device, an iPad or some tablet, maybe a phone, and now we've got something redemptive going on but utilizing the tool that they most love. Mm. And I think it probably needs to be limited. I talk to NCAA athletic coaches all the time, and I always say the answer's in the middle. If you completely take it away, I sure understand that. You're just going to have angry athletes now that are just mad and can hardly wait for their social media fix. Other coaches, I say, I'm noticing they're shortening the discussion time in front of the whiteboard on the play that's coming up next week, and they're letting them have some time on social media, and then they come back. So instead of a two-hour meeting, it's 4 30-minute meetings with social media fixes in between. Now, that may sound like you're giving in to the problem, but I actually think we're saying, hey, end user of what I want from you, I get you. And I want you to have this tool that could be used for great purposes. In fact, I want to help you use it for good purposes, not for some of the purposes that you might be using it for right now. So that would be what I would say. I was very concerned, Mary, as I'm sure you were, at the data that she shared on depression levels mm-hmm. going up as of 2011, 2012.
I didn't know that they continued to go up.
Yeah, it's quite scary. But isn't it interesting that it coincides with the smartphone?
Absolutely.
When we reached a tipping point and the majority of high school students or college students, or for that matter, us, mm-hmm. had them in our hands, it was a different world. And now there's that constant stimuli coming at us. Probably overstimulation mm-hmm. is happening. So finding ways to just balance and having conversations with students, let's balance the two, and here's why. And by the way, I think that here's why is very important. I think just saying because I said so doesn't work anymore. I think we need to say because I care about your mental health. Do you know what's going on with your peers mm-hmm. in America today or around the world? So I think that's huge. The only other last thing I would say real quick is if you're an educator listening or you're a part of any profession and you work with young people, share this podcast. Share it with colleagues and friends and then host a conversation. This would be a great fodder for a great discussion on what would be solutions that work where you are with these students so we can help them become great, healthy adults when they get done under our care. So I think that I would just stop there, and hopefully that's going to be some good news in the midst of some of the challenges we have with students.
That's awesome. Thanks, Tim. Well, to our listeners out there, we hope that you were able to gain some new knowledge and insight from our conversation today, and we hope to see you next time. For now, if you would like to learn more, please join us at www.growingleaders.com, and we'll see you next time.